Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is Mike McDaniel. Mike, it's been like a month since we recorded. How have you been, sir?
So we tell people that we're going to make sure we give them new content every couple of weeks. And right after we said that, we literally went a month without recording. So it happens. But yeah, good, Joey. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. And you are correct. It has been far too long. And given that it's been so long, we kind of knew that we couldn't just come back with any old episode. We had to give the people something special coming back. And so for this episode, you know, we had to go to the very best, you know, only the very best. And so please welcome to the podcast once again. You know him, you love him, you've missed him. From stateofthu.com, Mr. Cam Underwood joins the program once again. Cam, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good. I'm good as I'm pantomiming my champion's entrance to the ring here that people can't see as we're recording this. But nah, man, I mean, it's always good to hang out with you guys. We had a nice 40-minute just catch-up session before we started recording and whatnot. But no, I mean, it's good to be here, talk a little bit of football, and tell some jokes.
That's a sweet championship belt I see you wearing on your shoulder, too. So we'll see if you retain the championship throughout this episode. We'll have to see.
Nobody's going to steal it from me. Like, whatever. Any of you other contributors, come fight me for it, and you're going to lose. Like, that's what I got to say.
I think Dan Rubin's ready to throw hands somewhere, so we'll have to find out. But in any case, we are going to hit on Miami here. I think there's a lot of interesting things to talk about with Miami as it relates to this offseason. But before we get started, one of the things I did want to acknowledge, recognize, something that happened since the last time we recorded. Coming from Georgia Tech, rising senior defensive tackle Brandon Adams, passed away in a very unfortunate incident. It was the Saturday night, Sunday morning, right before spring practice started here a few weeks ago. News came out. The story goes that it sounds like it was a very just, you know, innocent, unfortunate occurrence. He was apparently, you know, helping, or he was pledging a fraternity, and part of that process, you know, they were trying to learn a step dance, as I understand it, and they were practicing together. They took a break. He felt lightheaded. He kind of fell over, hit his head, and by the time he got to the hospital, he was gone. I have heard nothing but fantastic things about Brandon, both on and off the field. He seems like he was an incredibly bright young man, very, very talented on the field, but even off the field. I mean, I think he was involved in his high school theater department. He seemed like he was very, very bright and just a very beloved guy by, you know, teammates as well as other students and faculty throughout Georgia Tech. So wanted to recognize him. He and his family and that whole team really are in our thoughts and prayers, and really just an unfortunate occurrence, but he continues to live on with his teammates, and we'll be thinking about him and his family here for the coming season.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Obviously, you get one of those freak accidents. I mean, unfortunately, I think with college football as a whole, like, you get these random unfortunate incidences that happen, I don't know, I'd say like once a year, where, you know, somebody passes out during a workout, but you don't ever expect somebody to literally feel lightheaded, fall over, hit their head, and have that be it, especially at such a young age. So again, very unfortunate. Thoughts and prayers to the family. Obviously a very tough situation. I know a lot of the Georgia Tech, the players, the coaching staff, you could tell that Jeff Collins, you know, even just coming into Georgia Tech and not knowing Brandon extraordinarily well, it was pretty clear that he took it hard. So I think that kind of impact that, you know, Brandon made on his teammates and on the new coaching staff kind of speaks volumes about who he was as a person. So obviously really unfortunate situation, and it's something that I think that the team will rally around on the field, but hopefully off the field as well, because obviously it's a really unfortunate situation.
Yeah, and I just want to echo what Joey and Mike said. You know, I didn't really look too much into it, but when you see a young person losing their life at that age of 21, it's always a tragic kind of a thing. So to Brandon Allen and to the Georgia Tech University, or sorry, Georgia Institute of Technology and the athletic department and football team, I just offer my sincere condolences and thoughts and prayers moving forward, and hope that, you know, that they can do so successfully.
Yeah. He and again, his teammates and his family definitely will be in our thoughts and prayers moving forward. So you know, again, just an absolute tragedy and heartbreaking and all that stuff. But again, he continues to live on with his teammates who are hopefully going to play this season to honor him. They'll be wearing stickers of his number on their helmets all season. So they'll continue to remember him and honor him. So, you know, best wishes to him and his teammates and his family moving forward. All right, let's move on here. Cam, we have not had you on in a little bit to talk about Miami. I don't know if that much has really changed in that time. There was some word about like the head coach changed or something like that. So I don't know if you've really noticed a difference or anything, but some guy named Manny is running the team now, taking over for the previous guy named Mark. Have you seen a change with this program under this Manny gentleman as opposed to the Mark guy that was running it before?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. Appreciate the question. Appreciate that. Yeah, there's been a big.
I'm well researched, you know.
I can tell. Yeah. So we do have Manny Diaz as head coach. Now he was the defensive coordinator for the last 3 years under Mark Richt. He left for exactly 18 days to be the head coach of Temple until Mark Richt decided that he was going to retire, which of course happened when I was at brunch. So this is one of those things when I'm here, it was celebrating a friend's birthday. It was like 40 of us out there. So seeing, you know, old friends, meeting new friends, having picture after picture of bottomless mimosas, and my phone is just going insane. And I'm like, okay, like, why are people calling me? Because then, you know, when your phone rings and dings as much as mine was, you think something bad has happened. So I'm like, oh my God, hope it's not my mom. Hope it's, you know, whatever. And look, and every single person I know is like, oh my God, Mark Richt retired. And I'm like, I'm somewhere in South Florida, well indisposed to be able to, you know, write about that. But yeah, Manny Diaz, in that day, he was interviewing somebody down here in South Florida for the offensive coordinator's job at Temple. His wife called him incessantly to that same level where he stepped out of that interview and said, oh, this is my wife. I got to take it. And she was like, Mark Richt retired. And Blake James called. They met. He went back to the board of trustees. He went back later that night, offered the contract. Boom. He called Temple, said, yes, I'm leaving. You already knew that this was the job that I was going to be a head coach to try to eventually get. It just happened to come to fruition in less than 3 weeks. And yeah, it's been a wholesale change. On defense, Manny is no longer going to be the defensive coordinator. He brought in his protege, Blake Baker, who took over for him when he left from Louisiana Tech to go to Mississippi State years ago, who runs the exact same defense. So Blake Baker is going to be the defensive coordinator. And then he cleaned house on the offensive side of the ball because Miami's offense was terrible and the quarterback play was literally, I believe, the worst in college football in Division I last year. And that is saying something when you have, you know, a program of Miami's caliber with, you know, a top four defense, three. I mean, the best passing defense in America, best, you know, tackles for loss, third down conversions allowed, was number one. So, yeah, so you have one change on the defensive side of the ball, coaching staff, and every single staff or staffer on offense has changed. And Manny came into this job, and you've heard it and seen it, hashtag TNM, talking about the new Miami. And it's really new from what Richt did, because Richt is he was in his 60s. He's approaching retirement, probably in retirement now. He's not going to coach again. You know, he's not going to pull a Schnellenberger and say, okay, I'm going to start a program at FAU in 5 years. And Mark Richt is done as a head coach. You know, he's retired. So he had that kind of energy where, you know, I'm going to do it the way that I want to do it. I'm going to do it how I want to do it. And any of these extras and things and whatnot, the extra time and the extra energy and whatnot, I'm not going to do that because, you know, I won so many games. I've been places. You know, I coached a Heisman winner when I was offensive coordinator at Florida State. You know, I did my 15 years at Georgia and won 9.6 games a year, whatever. So he didn't have that same fire anymore. And you saw it like a little bit. Like there was one game when Mark Richt really got angry on the sideline. And I think it was 2017 season. It was a home game. I forget which one. Maybe even the bowl game where he really was emotional. Outside of that, you didn't have that. But Manny Diaz does. And, you know, he's the brainchild behind, or the brain father of the turnover chain. you know, all these different kind of things that Miami's done, especially on defense, to be so elite. Manny Diaz came up with those things. So he has that new energy, and he's talking about that with the staff and the way that they're, you know, presenting the program and things like that. So, I mean, hashtag TNM, the new Miami, it is a real departure from the previous staff. And, you know, yeah, you don't have any – I'm not going to say you don't have any, but – there was that clear case of nepotism with John Rick being the quarterback coach, who, I mean, is still unhired. All the other coaches, you know, Ron Dugans, he gets hired back at Florida State. Stacey Searles, he's up at Virginia or North Carolina as offensive line coach. Thomas Brown, he's at South Carolina as running backs coach. All these other coaches, you know, Todd Hartley, he's at Georgia, ace recruiter. You know, all these other guys, they go places, boom, they get hired. John Richt still doesn't have a job. And that kind of proves the some of the issues. So that's the short story long for saying, yes, the energy around the program is long. The way that things are running is very different. And I don't know if you guys saw it, but there was a wonderful, wonderful piece in The Athletic about Nick Saban looking for Dan Enos for a coaching staff meeting. And so he's going through the whole Alabama facility. Where's Dan? Where's Dan? Screaming at people. Where the F is Dan? Because Dan Enos was the quarterback's coach, and he was in line to be the offensive coordinator this year. And none of the staffers were willing to tell Nick Saban that Dan Enos had actually left and was in Coral Gables because he's Miami's offensive coordinator now. So there's like a wonderful piece by Bruce Feldman, I believe it was, detailing all of that behind the scenes. It was really, really awesome. So be sure you guys check that out also.
Hey, Cam, so the Mark Richt stuff kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, as somebody who's around the program, nobody was really expecting him to step aside when he did, right? I mean, it was such – I mean, it ended up working out fine because, you know, you do get Manny Diaz back in a span of like 72 hours or whatever it was. But nobody was really expecting this, right? I mean, it did come as out of nowhere. Nowhere, as you know, everybody kind of interpreted it to be, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, there were conversations, you know, through the losing streak towards the end of the year about, or even through like pretty much the whole year, because obviously the product on the field was not to the level that it should have been at Miami. So the conversations are had about, you know, changing staff members, which means and necessitates firing your son or leveraging your 30 years of coaching experience to get him hired or promoted up elsewhere. So, you know, you can bring in an offensive coordinator who's going to coach quarterbacks and call plays, which means Mark Richt, you're not going to call plays yourself. You know, there were a lot of moving parts and pieces that really needed to be done. And I think the introspection for Mark Richt, he came to the point of that he didn't have it in him to do all of that. You know, to give all that extra effort, to do all these extra, you know, just different things. Like, you know, he came to Miami because he wanted to call plays. Like, you know, play calling was taken away from him at Georgia. You had Mike Bobo, you had other people. But he leveraged that and came into Miami and said, cool, like, I will coach, but I want to call plays. And he had the cachet to be able to do that. Offensive coordinator at Miami the last couple of years was Thomas Brown, the running back who played for Mark Richt and everything. And he helped with installs and game planning and whatnot. But Mark Richt called the play. So it doesn't matter what Thomas Brown is saying. He's saying, hey, coach, I've done this before. Sit down. But giving up that control and then also really just obviously, you know, recruiting this past year didn't go the way it should have. And everybody knows that Mark Richt is a very pious man and very, very staunch on all of his rules. And some of those things were grating on some of the players in the program. You know, you look at a Jeff Thomas who was going to leave and was finishing up his fall semester before transferring to Illinois. And luckily he was still here to be able to come back to the team. Things like that. I mean, Marquez Ezard, he left and didn't come back. But, you know, you look at there were seeds of discontent there. And I just think that Mark Richt, I don't know what about that day. Because that was New Year's Eve, I want to say, or something like that. I don't know what it was about that day that made him come to that conclusion, but it wasn't like, and Blake James, the athletic director, said when directly asked that he was not going to force Mark Richt into any changes. So I take that to, you know, I take Blake James at his word because he's done a lot of things he's said before that he didn't push this on Mark Richt. I just think that Mark Richt kind of saw the writing on the wall eventually. And that was just kind of the day that, you know, it was a Sunday, you know, maybe he went to church and prayed about it. And then, you know, spoke to his wife about it and, you know, came to that final conclusion. But yeah, it was pretty much out of the blue.
Cam, you mentioned the thing about Thomas Brown. I always found that really interesting. Pretty unusual in my experience that a running backs coach would then be your offensive coordinator. Typically, your running backs coach is, you know, he's going to coach the backs, but he's more there as like a recruiting kind of guy on the staff as opposed to an X's and O's play calling kind of situation. You know, usually that's more on the quarterbacks coach, some degree either the wide receivers coach or the offensive line coach. You know, so that's. I always found that odd. I thought that was interesting.
You also had all those different guys had coordinator titles. So, you know, Thomas Brown was the offensive coordinator. Ron Dugans was the pass game coordinator. Stacey Searles was the run game coordinator. So, I mean, you had like those kind of things, but I mean, when you have 25-year-old John Richt, who, I mean, God bless his soul. Like, I don't wish ill upon him, but I mean, he was so far out of his depth. That, I mean, yeah, that's dragging down the entire staff and everything. Obviously, Stacey Searles was not able to recapture his previous work, you know, at Texas when they had a good offensive line, or Virginia Tech when he was there previously, and things like that. So, I mean, you had multiple people failing at their jobs. And, yeah, the construction of the staff was weird because, yeah, you gave Thomas Brown the offensive coordinator title so you could pay him to get him away from Georgia is mm-hmm. what it was. You know, because he was at Wisconsin for a year, coached Melvin Gordon. He's at Georgia for a year or two, and he coached Todd Gurley. Cool. Awesome. I want that guy to recruit and bring in and coach up our backs. But to be able to compete, we have to give him that title. And that's really where that came from. But it was, you know, it was ceremonial at best because, yeah, like you said, you know, Mark Richt was doing the game planning and calling the plays. So, like, yeah, I mean, you put that on his title, and then you can add a couple, you know, crooked numbers or some zeros on his paycheck, and you know, you get him down here.
Makes total sense. The other guy that you mentioned coming in that I think is one of the more like under the radar intriguing stories of the offseason in college football is Dan Enos leaving Alabama to come down to Miami as quarterbacks coach and offensive coordinator. There's a lot of really interesting stuff, you know, and rumors and such about how he went about leaving Alabama that if you haven't looked into it yet, I would recommend reading it because it turns into some pretty good cartoon level kind of stuff. But he inherits a quarterback room, Cam, that has a lot of flux. It's kind of going through a lot of flux right now of guys coming in, guys going out. It was not really a particularly stable room to begin with. So two really meaningful things here. First of all, Cade Weldon was a guy who had not really gotten a lot of playing time yet as a quarterback, despite, you know, what we had seen from Malik Rozier, from Nikosi Perry, those boys. Cade Weldon's transferring away from Miami. I don't know if he's declared necessarily where he's going yet or not, and it's probably not that important. At the same time, coming in the door, none other than our boy Tathan Martell coming in from Ohio State. And he's a guy that brings, I think, plenty of, I don't know if baggage is the right word, but he's not shy about what he thinks and what he feels at any given point, you know, so he brings some attention with him at least, pretty talented guy leaving Ohio State with Justin Fields coming in. There's just a lot going on with the Miami quarterback room. I guess when Dan Enos walks in, and this is kind of the group that he's working with, what is it that you think that he's really got to deal with here in terms of personalities, skill sets, you know, incumbents, all sorts of factors that play into figuring out who's going to be leading the offense this fall?
Yeah, that's the thing that we're looking at most closely. That and offensive line, because the offensive line for Miami has been a sieve recently, which is – you know, unsustainable as well. So first I'll start with Cade Weldon. Yeah, he wasn't going to play here. I mean, he was the other quarterback in the recruiting class with Nikosi Perry. Yeah, they were both, you know, Perry was like a medium high four star. Weldon was a high three star ish, low four star guy in the same recruiting year as Tate Martell, by the way. So they're all that same 2018 recruiting class and whatnot. So 18? 2017 recruiting class, because he sat 17, played 18, Nicosi did. So, yeah, 2017 recruiting class. Huh?
What year is it? I can't remember. I can never
remember. I know. I literally had to look at my computer and say, well, yeah. So they were in that same class. I wrote at the time it was better to stick with Perry and Weldon than go after Martell when he decommitted from the first school he was committed to, because he said he had interest in Miami. But I was like, look, we got two good dudes. You know, it didn't end up going that way. But Cade Weldon was always the other guy in that class. When you bring in the best quarterback or one of the best quarterbacks in that class and Tate Martell down here to Miami with Nicosi Perry as well, and Jaren Williams, who was last year's 2018 commit from Lawrenceville, Georgia, the same city but other high school as Trevor Lawrence.
My hometown, baby.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. You went to Central Gwinnett or you went to Cartersville?
I went to Collins Hill, but Central Gwinnett was like right next to where I went to church growing up.
Okay. So, yeah, Joey knows exactly where that is. But, yeah, when you have three guys who are way more talented than, I mean, the writing is on the wall. And Cade Weldon got suspended as a redshirt. His redshirt year, he got suspended. And he got suspended last year as a redshirt freshman. So his first and second years on campus, he got suspended. And that kind of goes back to the previous conversation about Mark Richt being very strict about his rules and things like that. So it's better for him to seek shelter elsewhere because you have negative playing time for this guy moving forward. I mean, maybe he could be the holder on field goals and extra points, if that, but probably not. So, yeah, that's why he moved away. Getting back to Dan Enos and what he has three talented guys in this quarterback battle, Nicosi Perry, Jaren Williams, and Tate Martell. Each of them is unique. They have their own strengths. The weakness is, for everyone, this offense is brand new. And the Canes fan base, we had a Twitter party one day because Mike Harley or Jeff Thomas, one of the wide receivers, put up a screenshot of the cover of their playbook at a specific chapter, and it said motions. And Miami has not run motion at all in the better part of 15 years. And I'm talking about simple short motion orbit. Like, Miami lines up and runs their play. That's what we've traditionally done. So seeing even that there's going to be motions, and apparently lots of them, maybe not Matt Canada level motions, but you know, more than just sedentary, that was a big deal. So all these quarterbacks have to learn this system. That's a big hurdle. Each one of them has their athletic gifts that are, you know, good or bad also. Nicosi Perry, if he was a baseball player, he would have an 80 arm on the 20-80 scale. He has a cannon attached to his right shoulder. I mean, and I don't understand how, like, some people watch throws and they're like, oh, like, no, this other guy. I'm like, no, of these guys, Nicosi Perry has an absolute cannon. Now, he needs some touch on that. He needs to work on his footwork. He needs to work on his drops. All the quarterbacks do, especially since there's going to be, eye formation or under center more than, you know, with Mark Richt, we were in the shotgun 93% of the time. You're talking maybe 50-50 between under center and in the shotgun, maybe a pistol, maybe offset, something different. So, you know, working on the pace of your drops, that's a big thing. Everybody wants to talk about maturity because Mark Richt talked about that with Nicosi being such a big issue last year. But that's a thing that even Nicosi has said, he needs to grow up and not just be a reckless 19-year-old. He needs to comport himself like the quarterback at the University of Miami. So that's a big thing as well. And then also reading defenses. That's a thing that all of these players are going to have to struggle with because it might even be a little bit different than what they're used to because the offense is different than what they're used to. So that's Nicosi. Jaren is probably the most talented thrower of the ball of any of these three guys. I mean, he gets it. He played shotgun a lot in high school, but he's pretty good on his drop. So he's going to have to, work on that. Nicosi is more athletic than Jaren, but not as athletic as Tate. So Jaren is going to have to, you know, be that person who can maneuver in the pocket a little bit more and to not necessarily run, but just kind of evade people before he's able to throw. As I'm sitting here wiggling my chair, as I'm demonstrating that for you guys. And the last thing for him, last year as a redshirt freshman, because he came in as a early enrollee, so we get to see him last spring. You could even see in the spring game that college football was a half step or a step too fast for Jaren Williams. Everything was just spinning. that needs to slow down. He needs to be able to see the picture of the field, especially if we're going under center eye formation and doing hard play action, not that zone read play action where you're looking at the defense, where you take a picture, turn your back for a handoff, and you have to turn around and all of a sudden recapture what was actually there. So that would be Nicosi's strengths and then or weaknesses, Jaren being the same. Tate Martell is brash. He's cocky. I love that about him. He is not the most natural thrower of the ball. The other two, they throw a very tight spiral. So if you know watching like watching a college football being thrown because it has that white little half ring, it looks like a donut circle coming straight at you, you know, when it's a tight spiral. Tate's will flutter a little bit. So he has some of that. He's not the most accurate, and he really, really struggles with his drops. And Dan Enos has said that a couple of times. Like, he Tate Martell will fade one way or the other, like a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right. And that's kind of part and parcel because Tate Martell is 5'11", and Jaren Williams is 6'3", and Nicosi Perry is 6'4". So you got to kind of shade yourself a little bit to get to a window when you're 5'11", barely, you know, like 5'10", 5'11", you know, think Kyler Murray. You're not going to necessarily get a straight drop every time, but that bad habit can get exacerbated over time. So Tate Martell does have to work on that. Where Tate Martell is special, and you know this if you watch his highlights or if you saw any of the 82 million games from when he was in high school at Bishop Gorman on television, Tate Martell is electric when he has to extend the play. Now, it's the same style of play as Johnny Manziel, but I'm not going to say it's the same ability level. But that same kind of sandlot, okay, there's a guy coming from the blind side. I do a reverse exit. I'm running around. I'm extending the play. Even that long touchdown run he had against Rutgers for Ohio State last year, that was a thing where, you know, the play broke down, and then all of a sudden he's gone for 65 yards. You know, like that electric kind of thing. That ceiling for, like, I mean, I can hit a home run anytime is great, but can he hit the throw on time on second and seven to move the change? Can he do those kind of things? So, I mean, each of the players, and again, all these guys were 4 stars. I mean, Tate Martell was a 5-star for the balance of his cycle. I think in the very last post-signing day update for 247 and Rivals, they dropped him from, like, a 5-star down to like the highest 4-star possible. So between Perry and Williams and Martell, all three of these guys have talent. It's really just about coaching them up. And especially for Perry, who's going to be in his third year, and Williams, who's going to be in his second year. Like I spoke about before, there was zero player development happening at the quarterback position. You had a coach who didn't know what he was doing, and he was only doing what his dad told him to do, but his dad was the head coach, so his dad is really doing the job, but that means you're not really getting that development. So, you know, people who have been at practice, and we have a writer for State of the U who's been there every day, you're talking about the leaps and bounds that have been made by Perry and Williams. Well, yeah, when you have real coaching all of a sudden, these things happen. But, you know, Dan Enos has done a great job in multiple stops when he was at Central Michigan, and he's a Dearborn native, which is a near-lying suburb to Detroit, where I am from. If you've seen the movie 8 Mile, that is the city where B-Rabbit is from over there in Dearborn. So Eminem, you know, one time, only one shot. But, yeah, you know, he's a good Michigander. He worked at Central Michigan with the offensive line coach. He did a good job there. He did a good job with quarterbacks at Arkansas. Obviously, you saw the development that happened with both quarterbacks at Alabama last year. So I know that Dan Enos can do the job, but, you know, a progression takes time. And I've always believed that in every walk of life. So, you know, hopefully we see some progressional steps being taken this spring, and it will continue moving forward. But, yeah, you know, he does have a diverse cast and that he can choose from. And each player does offer their own strengths and weaknesses. But like when you have 3, 4-star or 5-star recruits in the room, there's no reason that Miami's quarterback play should be 123rd out of 123, period.
So I agree with that, Cam, but you know what? In addition to all the questions you guys have at quarterback, I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the transfer market a little bit, because as a Virginia Tech alum, the one guy that's the one guy of many transferring into Miami, of course, they've had some players transferring out as well, but the one guy transferring into Miami that I think will help them right away, a pass rush that was already very good, is former Virginia Tech defensive end Trayvon Hill. So tell me what you think of him. Tell me what you think of not only him, but the rest of the guys who have transferred into Miami in the offseason, the strides they've made in spring practice, and what you expect out of the guys coming into the program and the guys maybe who are leaving heading into the 2019 season.
Well, now most of the guys who are transferring in are not even here yet. So that's a thing that we're going to have to wait and see, and then just kind of bring the same performance that they had at their previous stops. But I mean, Tate Martell being one of those guys who has transferred in, KJ Osborne, wide receiver from Buffalo, who was the number two receiver for Tyree Jackson up there the last couple of years. He had like 800 something yards and almost double digit touchdowns in his career. He's another Michigander. He's a native from Ypsilanti who went to IMG Academy before going to Buffalo. He's a guy who's a fifth-year senior, and he's just going to be a professional in that room. Just knowing how to practice, being a little bit older, being, you know, things of that nature. I love the chat we have going on with the little annotations as we're recording. But, yeah, so, you know, those couple of guys on offense are here already, and that's going to be a help. Tommy Kennedy is a grad transfer from Butler. He played the last two seasons as their left tackle, but Miami's been working him at second team center this year because, I mean, maybe that's just the best place where he fits. So we'll see about that. On the other additions, so Trayvon Hill, he had the highest tackle for loss or pressure percentage of defensive end in the ACC through the time that he played, like the first three or four games last year. And when you come to a defense that is predicated on havoc, of getting up the field on the defensive line or the front seven, that seems like a perfect fit. I mean, you got a guy who was literally doing what our offense is built on better than anybody else in the conference. Yeah, sign me up. Give me that. I mean, like, and you know, it's a position where depth was needed, but you still have John Garvin, who's going to probably be a first or second round draft pick in 2020. Gregory Russo, he ended up having to redshirt, but this kid is massive. There's a picture on Twitter of tight end Will Mallory in a 3-point stance. And Will Mallory is 6'5", about 235, 240. And across from him is this gigantic beast. And you're like, you would think that Will Mallory is like 6'1", 210. But no, Greg Russo is 6'7", 270. I mean, he's just huge. He's his long arms. And I mean, this is a kid who played outside linebacker, wide receiver, and safety in high school. And got to college, and they finally embraced. I mean, and you get a, you know, full-time nutrition program, you get a weight program, and you just stack this weight on. He's a massive dude. And he personally precipitated the offensive line change last spring because Miami's offensive line could not block Gregory Russo. That kid is coming back as a redshirt freshman after hurting his knee last year. Jafari Harvey looks like the next John Garvin, who was a 3-star underrated kid, ended up as a 4-star from Port St. Lucie. He comes down, he's an early enrollee, and he's turning heads already. So, and you got Scott Patchen, a fifth-year senior who was a 4-star recruit. He's finally rounding into shape where he can be. I think he's on the number one defensive line right now, but he's in the rotation. So if you add in a Trayvon Hill to that kind of group, you know, where maybe you can bring along Russo and Harvey slowly and rotate him in with, you know, the other guys at the top of the rotation, that's a big win for Miami. On top of that, on the defensive line, Chigozie Nuruka from UCLA, he's a defensive tackle. He's kind of come over. He played 2 years ago in 2017. He played more than 2018 because they UCLA under Chip Kelly switched from a 4-3 to a 3-4, and he's not nose tackle sized. He's, you know, 3 or 5 technique sized as a defensive tackle. So once you go to a, you know, nose guard, you know, zero tech, you know, gigantic Jerry Ball, Vince Wilfork size dude, and you don't have that physical size, there go all your snaps. So he's going to come over to Miami and hopefully reprise the role that Tito Odenigbo had this past year, rotating in and being, you know, one of the top defenders on the defensive line. So that's another transfer we have coming in through the transfer portal. And I know, like, I'm going to keep going because there's more.
But wait, busy offseason on the transfer market.
Oh, and I mean, but like every article that you've read about like Miami killing the market and everything, yeah, because we went and got everybody like lickety split. Like it was that, you know, if you remember the old NCAA EA Sports game where you would like offer a guy and he would commit that first week before you had to use any resources to recruit him over time. That's basically what happened with the transfer portal. We contacted these dudes, boom, and they committed and they signed or whatever, and it was real quick. So you know, that was pretty awesome, you know, obviously needing to bolster this roster because, you know, when you're losing guys and, you know, to graduation and everything and having a mediocre at best, mediocre, very optimistically best, recruiting class, then you're going to have to go elsewhere to really fill in with game-ready bodies, because if you press these freshmen into action, I mean, to Corey Couch, I like him a lot. I think he can cover. He's a cornerback who's 5'9", 148 pounds. And you're going to throw him in day one in the ACC? Like, no, that's exactly. I mean, he's small, he's thin, and he's short. Like, Trajan Vandy was at least 180. You know, he's that same size, but he was bulky. Ta'Cory Couch is not that. So
he's taller than Darren Sproles and wider than Darren Sproles.
Right. Exactly.
How does that guy cover wide receivers?
Hey, man, you know, it takes a special person. But, you know, I just say that to say, like, if you're going to rely on those guys, you're going to need a year, maybe a physical development. So you got to go get these transfers. One of the most impactful, I think, transfers is going to be Bubba Bolden from USC. He was, I think, the number two overall safety a couple, 3 years ago in the recruiting class. He's the third Bishop Gorman player on Miami's roster from Las Vegas, Nevada, that joining freshman All-American tight end Brevin Jordan and the aforementioned Tathan Martell at quarterback. So he's coming over with a couple of those former teammates. Bubba Bolden is, you know, 6'3", 205, and he's, you know, just the prototype at free safety. He was going to start for USC last year, got kicked off of campus and, like, out of school for a incident. You can look it up. There's an article in the LA Times, but the details thereof are contested, but long story short, something happened. He wasn't able to be on campus or in school, but he served his year off campus, and they said, okay, we're going to reinstate you and things like that, but he instead decided that he's going to go from the community college that he attends now in the LA area. He's going to leave there and come over to Miami, and he's going to start. I mean, he's an NFL player, and Miami is going to have three NFL players. NFL type players are down the road, players at safety, and him, Amari Carter, and Gervin Hall. So, you know, players like Robert Knowles, who, you know, he's a good Hurricane, and I wish him the best and his degree and everything, but I don't want to see him playing anymore. Because if you remember in 2017, both touchdowns that Florida State scored were directly because Robert Knowles was out of position. So, we've been down this road with A.J. Highsmith. We've been down this road with Ntambu Akil-Fentress, of a guy who is just not physically talented enough to play at Miami in safety. You bring in a Bubba Bolden, and now you put him in that triumvirate again with Hall and Carter. Now that upgrades that position. Jalen Phillips was the number one overall recruit 2 years ago. He went to UCLA. He got injured. He, you know, had middling success. He decides that he's going to leave. He's transferring to Miami. He's going to have to sit this year. And then he'll play in 2020. And incidentally, Jalen Phillips is going to be a music production major, a music engineering major, which is Miami School of Music, from which I graduated, is a top three school of music in the country. And the music engineering major is the most difficult major in this elite school. So he's not even just like, oh, I'm using Fruity Loops or, you know, my Apple iPad or whatever. Like, no, he like, well, and it's funny. I hope to interview him and talk to him really about, you know, the foundations of music and, like, just, you know, like the nature of, like, sound waves and, like, things like that. I mean, but those are the things that you do in music engineering. So he's going to do that. And then, be here as well. So, like, he's not just some random SoundCloud rapper. Like, he's really technically advanced in the area of music. So I just want to put
what's wrong with SoundCloud? What's
the problem? No, if you are just a SoundCloud,
we're on SoundCloud.
No, hey, I'm not saying that SoundCloud is a bad platform. I'm saying for musicians, if you think that putting something up on SoundCloud is, like, as far as it goes in music, there are levels still beyond that. And Jalen Phillips is on one of those levels, and I hope to talk to him about that. The last transfer that I can think of is Asa Martin, running back from Auburn University. He is going to sit out this next season in 2019 as well. He was a four-star recruit, like the number eight overall running back last recruiting cycle. Asa Martin went to Auburn, and they just implemented this new you can play four games in a season rule before and maintain your red shirt. So they played him in four games and then played him in the bowl game. So he played his fifth game and burned his red shirt. And apparently he was, like, telling the coach, he's like, no, like, I played four. Like, I'm going to burn my red shirt. Like, come on, coach. And they put him in anyway. So he decided that he wanted to leave and go elsewhere. And that elsewhere is Coral Gables. So, yeah, lots of transfers. I might have even missed one. But a lot of those guys are going to have to plug and play. Trayvon Hill is going to play. Chigozie Nuruka is going to play. Bubba Bolden is going to play. KJ Osborne is going to play. Tate Martell, we'll see what happens. Tommy Kennedy, we'll see what happens. And the other guys are going to redshirt. But, yeah, lots of new dudes who played elsewhere in college football coming into Miami. And hopefully they keep playing at a great level.
By the way, you brought up the Bubba Bolden being dismissed from USC. I looked up the story of what happened in it. It sounds like it's something along the lines of like treason and insider trading or something like that, that he got kicked out of school for. I don't know. They're just allegations. Who's to say? I don't know what happened or not. Anyways, Cam, last question. Right now, Miami's win total for 2019 is 8.5. It sounds like you're going over.
Over.
Okay.
I mean, like
minus 145, but hey.
Right. I mean, our crossover opponents are whom? Florida State and.
Oh, you meant crossover. I was thinking out of conference. Sorry.
No. I mean, out of conference, we start with Florida. Yeah, I got that. Then we got Central Michigan, Bethune-Cookman, and somebody else. I don't even know. Hold on. I gotta look because Central.
I got it.
Okay.
Florida State and Louisville. They're getting Louisville at home.
Okay. Well, I mean, they're going to be a little bit tougher with Scott Satterfield than, they were last year, but that should still be a win. And then, yeah, I mean, unless Miami beats themselves again. Oh, and FIU, but that's going to be a win. So, I mean.
This is actually a super weird schedule for Miami. So Miami starts neutral site against Florida. Then they go to Chapel Hill. August
24th, by the way.
Oh, yeah. That's on week zero.
The earliest start ever.
Then in week two, they go to Chapel Hill and take on North Carolina. Then there are five straight home games against Bethune-Cookman, Central Michigan, Virginia Tech, Virginia, and Georgia Tech. And then four of the last five on the road at Pittsburgh, at Florida State, versus Louisville, at FIU, at Duke.
And there's three bye weeks in there because Miami has a bye week one because, you know, by moving the kick up. Because
they need attention. They need attention.
Yeah. Need the attention, you know, the spotlight. So starting on the 24th, excuse me, instead of the 31st, that adds a third bye week. So, yeah, you got a bye week in August, one in September, and then another one in November. So, yeah, it's a real intriguing schedule. But, yeah, I'm going over for sure.
Fair enough. We will revisit this here probably in like 3 to 4 months. We'll have to see. Mike, anything else for Cam Miami-wise before we move on into some other general ACC
stuff? Not Miami-wise, but there are some interesting ACC stories that I can't wait to get Cam's take on.
Ooh, Lord. Are there some interesting ACC stories? All right, so by the way, that is Cam Underwood. He's runs stateoftheu.com on the SB Nation Network. If you're looking for Miami facts and you didn't know about him, you're probably not listening to our podcast. So, but if you know friends that are looking for Miami stuff, send them to stateoftheu.com. Cam has all sorts of stuff there, as you can tell. He's extremely knowledgeable about the program. Go check him out there. Cam, you want to stick around and talk more ACC nonsense with us?
Absolutely.
Hell yeah. Okay, first order of business, since we haven't recorded in about a month here. And Mike, I want to get your take on this first. We got news a couple weeks ago. There's a man coaching in this conference named Dave Doran. He coaches at the North Carolina State University up in Raleigh. His team's pretty good. He got a contract extension recently. That's a good move, right? Like, that makes sense.
Don't let anybody ever tell you that you can't get by in life by being average. Moral of the story with Dave Doran. You can absolutely get by being average.
Dude, if you've learned anything from Scott Leffler and Brian Van Gorder, you can get by being like really subpar.
Really, really, really subpar. You just won't necessarily get paid as much as you would if you were just simply average. Dave Doran, average coach. Contract extension, pay raise. Don't let anybody tell you you can't be average, Joey and Cam. That's how I feel about it.
Man.
There's my rant.
Cam, as an ACC football fan, Are you concerned that a coach of the level of Dave Doran is remaining in the conference and going to be sticking around and continuing to build this NC State program?
I push back on the thought that he's going to continue to build the program. I think that he's hit the ceiling, because if with the guys who were on the team and the way that the schedule fell the last couple of years, if better was possible, better would have happened. You know, I looked up the Dave Doran's, was this 6 years in wherever NC State is? I have no idea.
Raleigh.
Raleigh, there you go. 3-9 his first year. Okay, fine. 8-5, 7-6, 7-6, 9-4, 9-4. Where's better? You know, like, I don't think that, I mean, you're not going to get too much above that. Plus the fact, even if you do in the Atlantic Division get much better, you got to go up against that beast from Clemson, South Carolina. So what? And, you know, you expect to beat Florida State. Cool. You couldn't even do that when they were terrible. You know what I mean? Like, I just – I'm fine with it. It raises the floor for NC State, but also maybe, you know, lowered the ceiling a little bit, kind of put them in kind of a narrow window of what, you know, their potential is. So I think the floor has been raised and the ceiling has been lowered, but I'm fine with it, really, with Dave Doran being there. It doesn't really scare me. It doesn't really do anything for me. And, I mean, I know that, you know, Mike gave his rant about, you know, underachieving and being mediocre and everything, but, you know, for a great number of programs, mediocrity would be an improvement. So, you know, being in that 8-9 win a year range, you know, you need to to have a good conference, you have to have multiple teams on that level. And if NC State is there as their ceiling of 9-4, including a bowl game, I think that that's fine. I wouldn't have extended him. I wouldn't have given him a raise personally, you know, like they did at NC State. But yeah, I don't feel any way tired or offended that he's going to continue to be there and lead an 8-9 team.
He's a good coach.
He's fine, right? Like, right. He got hired because he had a couple of really good teams at Northern Illinois. Those teams were built by Jerry Kill. Jerry Kill cuts and leaves and goes to Minnesota. Dave Doran takes him over and goes to the Orange Bowl, and as if like that was really his doing. He was only the head coach for 2 years at Northern Illinois before getting the NC State job. Cam, you mentioned his track record there, and this is what I was looking at earlier today. He is 43-34 at NC State, and in particular, he is 20-28 in conference play.
Ooh,
he is 8 games under 500 in conference play, right? Now, what you did also mention is he was 3-9 his first year at NC State, and he was 0-8 in ACC play that first year. So if we just take that out and we just look at the last 5 years, he is a collective 40-25. He is an even 20-20 in ACC play. And to me, the most telling thing is that, again, he's finished over 500 every single season of those past 5 seasons. He's won at least 8 games in 3 of those seasons. He's only finished ranked once.
Yeah.
They finished 23rd in 2017, and otherwise they have not finished ranked at all. And I've mentioned this before, and I've brought it up before we came on and started recording, is that we're getting very close to the episode that I cannot wait to do, which is where we sit here and we look back. Let's look at the roster that NC State had going into the 2017 season, and then let's look at the NFL draft of the past 2 seasons, including this one that's coming up later this month, and tell me how it is that he lost 8 games in 2 years with the players that were on that team. And tell me why this guy is deserving of an extension and a raise and all this stuff. That's the thing that I don't get. And we need to bring on our boy from NC State to discuss this, because I need to understand the Raleigh perspective on this. I feel like there should be some outrage somewhere that, again, a guy with a solid level of NFL talent on his roster is going 9-4, and we're not angry about that. Paul Johnson had almost no NFL talent on his roster, and they went 11-3 and won the Orange Bowl 1 year, right? Like, they were going over 500 in conference every single year, pretty much, except for 2015. Like, I mean, is where I have big questions about Dave Doran and his legitimacy as a coach in this program.
I mean, okay, so look, if you go through the regular season in 2018, you lost to Clemson, fine. That was a machine. You know, because you haven't won the Textile Bowl in a million years. Fine. You lost to Syracuse in the Dome by 10. That's not a great loss, but, I mean, there's worse out there, so fine. And then, okay, the one you lose to Wake Forest. Okay, yeah, all right. So, and then you get your doors blown off by Texas A&M in the bowl game. 2017, if you look, scroll, you lost to South Carolina in the opener, Notre Dame, Clemson, and Wake Forest to get. Wait, you lost to Wake Forest multiple years in a row? Okay, yeah, no, that's a problem, buddy.
That's the thing I don't get. I mean, and Wake Forest really has been the thorn in their side the last 2 years, and it's especially this past year. I mean, Wake Forest was like scratching and clawing trying to get to a bowl berth. You had them at home on a Thursday night, and you had them beat, and you found a way to lose the game. Like, there's a couple of small things that they could just do if they just do them right. You know, they have double digit wins at some point, and they don't for some reason. So. I don't know. Dave Doran gets an extension at NC State. He's getting paid $3.25 million annually through the 2023 season. I don't really understand it, but all right. I mean, if this is the guy that we really believe is going to, you know, get the program over the top and finish have a top 10 finish for the first time in program history, which is the most unthinkable, bonkers thing, you know, for a team that hasn't just started in the last 30 years. I mean, how they've never had a top 10 finish in their history is beyond me. But, I mean, I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
I mean, maybe they have leaned in to who they are, and they have a clear picture that, you know, that much better is not going to happen. And I would rather have this than try to blow it up in search of glory and end up with Will Muschamp. You know what I mean? Or something, you know, like you could – I mean, that's what Florida did. Now, remember, they got rid of Zook, and they said, okay, we're going to bring this guy in, and he's going to get us back to the top, and, you know, we're going to not take, you know, this level of success. Fine, you want to go somewhere else? University of Michigan, Lloyd Carr, you know, winning 9-10 games a year. Yes, he won that 1997 national championship, but past that, nothing else happened. But every year is 9-10-11 wins. But Michigan, no, they want to be Michigan men and everything. And I can say that because I have a family of Michigan men. I used to go to Michigan games growing up. But then they're saying, no, 10 wins is not good enough. And then what do? They brought in Brady Hoke and won 3 games, 4 games. You know what I mean? Like, maybe NC State is saying, let's not get too big for our britches. We know this is where we should be, and we're just going to be comfortable as we are.
That's totally fair. Any sort of coaching search turns into a crapshoot of get it right or get it wrong. So if that's the logic, is at least we know what we're going to get from this, fine with me, I guess. I'm okay with that.
Well, I feel like my rant about Dave Doran was just a starting point, because this next topic, Cam, I'm really curious to get your input on this and whether or not, as a Miami fan, you're angry or you're happy or I don't know, proud of your school for kind of starting this revolution. But hey, Paul Johnson's gone. Jeff Collins is in at Georgia Tech, and hey, new year, new team, new staff, and Georgia Tech has a takeaway cruiser. Hey, to hell with the takeover chain, the takeaway chain.
Turnover
chain. Give us the takeaway cruiser.
Hell yeah. Cam talks about how the Miami program kind of looks different going from Mark Richt to Manny Diaz. This is like upgrading from your grandparents' mid-80s Oldsmobile to like a 2018 Corvette here. In terms of going from Paul Johnson's program to Jeff Collins' program. So a program that used to almost aggressively try not to make any waves or draw any attention to themselves in any way, shape, or form. We're in spring practice, and what we found out is that Jeff Collins on their defense now, Jeff Collins, of course, the person that made famous the money down on third downs at Florida and then at Temple, the swag chalice up at Temple. He had the, I think, cans of swag. It was a recruiting tool at Mississippi State, all this. Georgia Tech now has a takeaway cruiser, and the cruiser, for those unaware, is kind of a low-riding bike.
Screw the turnover chain, Joey. Give me the 3-speed bike.
I need a mode of transportation. up in here for getting interceptions.
Give me that basket and that paperboy route. Let's get to work.
For those unfamiliar with the geography of Georgia Tech's campus, the football stadium and the locker room and all that is maybe a quarter mile or so from the practice field. It's not that far, but it's some sense of a walk. It's not like right next door. And so basically what this enables the team to do is a certain defender who's creating turnovers in practice now gets to ride loops around his teammates as they walk to practice, flaunting the fact that he got a turnover in the previous practice. So this seems absolutely badass, in my opinion. Cam, do you feel threatened by this, by an ACC team bringing in a turnover mode of transportation?
Absolutely not. No, I don't. I mean, and Manny Diaz has even spoken about this. Miami was not the first program to have a prop on the sideline for a turnover or anything. We just happened to revolutionize it and make it iconic. You know what I mean? Like the viral moment came after the turnover chain came out to Malik Young a couple years ago the first time. That really elevated the sideline prop thing into being this moment, this meme, this, you know, great thing across like pretty much any industry. Like I've seen it in, you know, insurance offices and high schools and elementary schools and spelling bee. I mean, like everyone has like a thing now. And that was really because of what Miami did with it and kind of the ethos around it. But for anybody, and like everybody has one now, every single person. I mean, you got Tennessee, they had the trash can, and you got the shoulder pads plays that you got. I mean, like everybody has their own thing. So like, dude, like be you, lean into it, enjoy, you know, and there's many different versions of things and everybody can kind of live their truth and have their own kind of prop or, you know, their, you know, low riding bike or whatever that they have that works for them in the situation that does work for them. So no, I mean, I don't feel threatened. And I mean, I would, if, you know, I would feel threatened if Miami had come up with the idea first and we were McDonald's and you guys were McDowell's from Coming to America. You know what I mean? Like if you were, you know, having the golden arcs coming off the golden arches, if it was like something like that, I would feel that way. But in that Miami didn't start it necessarily, even though we did revolutionize it. No, I don't feel any way, worried about it or anything. But hey, I love seeing all the different ones just so I can laugh at them. So, I mean, if it works for you, like if you like it, I love it. Go ahead.
Mike, you officially have homework. I need you to figure out what the turnover prop for Virginia Tech should be. The most culturally appropriate in Blacksburg turnover prop and or mode of transportation would be.
It's going to be the ball. I was going to say they turn over the ball so much, they should be giving out turnover props, bro. Like we don't get a turnover chain on defense until we actually turn the other team over. We're having a hard time doing that as a program right now.
Well, I'm trying to make a Bud Foster joke, and I just don't know how at this point. It's oh, well, we'll get there. Okay. Keep in mind, Georgia Tech, takeaway cruiser. If you're ever having a bad day, just think about that. It's a good day, I think, if you think about that. All right. Let's move on. Gentlemen, I have bad news for you. It is officially the end of an era. It is the end of an era. We've had a great time and we've celebrated and we've got a lot of good memories, but it is time officially. The Carrier Dome is getting a new roof for Syracuse.
Holy shit. What will we do?
Yeah. Who knew? Hold on to a loved one. You know, I have my phone's on if you need to call for some support. Carrier Dome is getting a new roof, and I'll tell you what, they're even getting an air conditioning system in there. Sponsored by Carrier. Sponsored by Carrier.
Wow.
It all makes sense now. My life makes sense.
That's right. Now, important fact here, this construction effort all starts March 1st of 2020. So the Orange have one last ride under the current roof. So, you know, don't need to worry or panic yet. But there is a chance that going into 2020, the roof might not be done yet. And Syracuse is going to have to figure out where the hell to play football games in Syracuse, New York, that's not in the Carrier Dome. And I, for one, intrigued to see how that whole thing turns out. So please join me in pouring one out for the roof, the current roof of the Carrier Dome.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, you know, like it for me, you know, I kind of think back to the old Twinkie Dome, where the Minnesota Twins used to play, you know, and how they would have to redid the roof, or it collapsed on them under the weight of snow one time. Actually, that's what happened. But they used to play football and baseball there. Yeah, you remember that. But yeah, the snow in Minnesota was so heavy that it couldn't be supported by the structure and it caved in. So like that's the last time that I remember like a domed stadium as such, like getting a new roof, like the Silver Dome in Detroit. Like, no, we just moved out of there to Ford Field and whatnot. So there was no like reconstruction of the roof. But yeah, that's a little crazy. I mean, I'm interested to see what they do. Obviously, they do play lacrosse in the same dome there. And I know that, you know, the lacrosse program at Syracuse has won multiple national championships. So I don't know if they want to do something, if they're going to like paint a mural on the underneath side or something like that. I don't know, but the bigger thing to me is like the actual like climate control of having air conditioning in there. Like that's going to be crazy. But yeah, I mean, just like redoing the roof is it's its own thing. You know, it was different. You know, like I said, at the Twins Dome, because you played baseball in there, and the dome ceiling roof was the same color as the baseball. So you had to like go in there early and take outfield practice so you could see it like on a ball hit where the ball went, because if you looked up, it would be gone. But I mean, with the football going against like a nylon kind of roof, that's not going to be the issue. But yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. And definitely in a couple of years when it's done, all of the people there in Syracuse, New York are going to be very, very, I don't know if happy is the right word. I mean, because it's like, it's not like it's South Florida where it gets hot and everything. Like, you know, I'm running the air conditioning at quite cool right now, even though it's, you know, April already, but I'd be doing this year round. So for them, maybe it'll be just having heat during the wintertime, because it does snow a lot in northern New York. Upstate, excuse me. They call it upstate New York.
Well, I guess we can say that Dino Babers is bringing the heat.
Boom! Oh,
wow, with the dad jokes, bro.
Oh, man. Had to be done.
I'm just happy because it's finally 2019 and indoor structures are going to have HVAC work done to them.
Yo, it's literally called the Carrier Dome. I mean, Jesus God, dude, it's 2019.
And it's been there forever, by the way. You know, it's not like new.
Yeah, this has been going on for like decades. So there's that. So good on you, Syracuse, finally making the decision to cut ties with your lack of air conditioning and your way out of date roof. Good on you. We'll see if this affects the 2020 season. Hopefully not, but on some level looking for entertainment.
Well,
I wouldn't hate if it did.
I mean, but wouldn't it stand to reason then that Syracuse would be a little bit of a different team since they're playing outdoors instead of indoors probably? Because I don't think that there's another dome in the Syracuse area. So, you know, they're going to play somewhere. Maybe they're playing on real grass instead of turf. You know, and that changes the speed of how you do things. I mean, like, there could actually be, like, a demonstrable difference to their season and style of play moving out of the Carrier Dome for a year or more, hopefully. I mean, I think Babers hopes it's only one season, but I don't know. This, I'm thinking on the fly here. I'm thinking out loud. I don't know.
I think if you get it solved in, like, late September or something, it probably doesn't make that much of a difference to them. But if you go into like the back half of your season and you still don't have an indoor stadium to play in, and you got to play home games in the wind and the snow coming off the lake and all that, I mean, yeah, that could get real dicey real quick. So luckily, you know, construction projects tend to go according to plan. So,
you know, oh, yeah, every construction project that I've ever seen was like spot on, no overages on money or time. Yeah, they go really easily, of course.
I'm sure it'll be fine. All right. Couple more things. Did you guys see these new uniforms for Pittsburgh?
I did.
Hell yeah.
They are sexy.
Should have been doing this all along.
Yeah, what have we been doing for a couple decades now?
Getting it wrong. That's what they've been doing.
Pitt with the retro colors.
They've been getting it wrong. Yeah.
These are hot.
They really needed this.
Mm-hmm.
Rebrand city.
Big fan. Pitt, congratulations. You got it right. These uniforms are dope. They are sexy. The thing I'm curious about right now, I'm looking at these this combination that was released by the school here a couple days ago. The pants on both the home and the away uniform are yellow. I'm curious to see if you can like parlay this thing into a yellow top, what that would look like. I don't even know. You got yellow helmets. So I don't know. That could be interesting.
They'll probably have that for like a special game or something. But the thing I wanted to say is it's not just football. It is athletic department wide is rebranding in the retro color scheme and script pit and everything like that for the uniforms, because they released a couple of the other sports at the same time from the Pittsburgh athletic department that they did the football uniform release. So it's pretty cool. And like you said, for a couple few decades, they've been getting it wrong, and they finally went back to their roots, you know, obviously with little updated tweaks, kind of like, I mean, not in the exactly the same, but like Miami kind of went retro-ish instead of doing like all this busy stuff to kind of recapture the glory of former uniforms. Excuse me, Pitt is doing that athletic department wide, and I think that they are sexy.
Mm-hmm. I'm just hoping that with these new uniforms, Pat Narduzzi realizes they probably shouldn't throw the ball 30 times a game with Kenny Pickett. That's really all I'm hoping for now. Like, turn over the new leaf, like go full blast, like get the new uniforms, start handing the ball off more. Like, don't throw the ball with Kenny Pickett.
Well, you know, there's a team in 2017 that was once undefeated and went to Pittsburgh, and Kenny Pickett threw the ball three times and beat that team. That would have been your 2017 Miami Hurricanes. So you say don't do that, and it just gives me flashbacks to, oh my God, how terrible were we that we let them do this, which everyone sees they should not be doing, and they beat us with it.
Yeah, and no disrespect to Kenny Pickett, but he is just atrocious throwing the football. It's just not good.
Although I will say I'm glad there weren't any cameras in the room watching me freak out as he ran like a naked play action bootleg to score a touchdown against Miami, that against what was it, 10-0 Miami?
10-0 Miami
2017.
Yep.
They're in Pittsburgh by a Pittsburgh team that wasn't going to a bowl game.
That is also correct, sir.
Okay, all right, just checking. Just making sure I got the memory right.
No, I hear you, but all of those statements were factual. And you know, I'm not gonna rage about it because I did at the time, but yeah, it's just funny that, you know, 2 years on, we're saying, oh, this is a thing that Pittsburgh and Kenny Pickett should not be doing. And I'm sitting over here like, they beat us. That very thing. So
it's okay. Bad? It's all over now. It's all over now. Manny Diaz is the head coach.
So we're here. Let's go, Manny. Come on. Vamos, vamos.
Vamos. Vamos, Manny.
Dale.
All right. Last thing I have before, like, the big finish here. There was a story that came out recently about Louisville, my Cardinals. I'm wearing my shirt here right now for those watching. Louisville in 4 years under Bobby Petrino went over its recruiting budget by well into the seven digits. You know, and it's one thing. I mean, you know, we've been in business. People go over budget from time to time. It happens. And, you know, sometimes it's a conscious decision. Sometimes you're not paying attention. But to me, what's more relevant here is that Louisville went way over budget on recruiting. And my question becomes, on what? It's not like Louisville's been recruiting particularly well. Last year, they had the 72nd class in the country. They were worst in the Power Five. What on God's green earth is Louisville spending recruiting money on, getting like decidedly mediocre classes left and right? Yes, Michael.
I'd like to take the first stab at this. I'm going to go with motorcycles, mistresses, and Brian Van Gorder.
This is where we make strippers in the dorm jokes, right?
Yeah, I guess so. They've had so many issues with all facets of their athletic department. We can even skip over the strippers with the basketball program, and we still got books worth of jokes.
Man, I will say – it's absolutely my favorite part of being a Louisville fan and a Georgia Tech fan and alumnus is that I have the opportunity at a moment's notice to decide whether I want to be on or off of my high horse. Because if I want to be on my high horse, I can easily take the Georgia Tech fan perspective. If I want to just have no regard for the high horse, go Cards.
I mean, Yeah, just because your former coach fell off that high horse and broke his neck and scratched his face. What?
Anyway. The steel horse, actually.
Exactly, that motorcycle accident years ago, for those who didn't remember. But for Louisville, if we're going to be real for a second, they had 43 official visits in 2018. They had in 2017, so 43 players came for official visits, 39 in 2017. So that's underneath the allocation from the NCAA, but maybe they, again, were just showing them a very good time when they were coming into town for that. But then, yeah, as you guys asked it to me earlier, I said, you know, hey, maybe the answer was Lamar Jackson, because, like, yeah, you know, you had to get him there somehow. And I mean, yes, that's a joke. Don't write in. Don't look for me. Don't want to fight me. Like, I know that they were the first team to really offer him to be a quarterback, and Miami and Florida, everybody offered him late. Yeah. But, you know, jokes over facts. No, they were paying Lamar Jackson. So, I mean, yeah, that's how they went over their budget. And then also Brian Van Gorder, who, I mean, just, man, I really was hopeful that even with a Mark Richt coached offense, we were going to be able to go up against a BVG defense this year, because, oh man, how fun would that have been for Miami?
Yeah. Joey, remember when we said that there's no way that Brian Van Gorder could be worse than Peter Sermon, and we were wrong by like hundreds of yards per game. We were wrong. I mean, it was so, so bad. I think that's bordering on one of the worst takes Joey and I have ever had. That Brian Van Gorder, there's no possible way he could be worse than Peter Sermon. And he was spectacularly worse. Like, not even just a little worse, like way, way, way worse. Wasn't even close.
I tell you what, I say stuff that's wrong all the time, and I'm happy to own it. And I do not own that one. That's not on us. We were correct. It just, I think there was some sabotage or something that went into that, because there is just no excuse for what Louisville's defense was last year. I don't own that. It's not on me.
Look, I'll put it to you like this, as I'm listening to you guys. It's almost as though on his treadmill workout one week, Brian Van Gorder was listening to the Basketball Conference ACC podcast and said, you know what? I'm going to take that bet that I can't be worse, and I'm going to show these guys exactly how bad I can do. Because that's how bad it was.
Hey, man, failing upwards, it still got him hired somewhere else.
I mean,
it all works out in the end, right? Like,
yeah.
Amazing. Just totally amazing.
I'm only marginally kidding when I say that we really should just be a Bowling Green football podcast this fall, because the Scott Loeffler, Brian Van Gorder experiment is just too good to pass up.
Wait, they got Loeffler and Van Gorder?
Loeffler is their head coach, bro.
What? Oh, my. Wow. Mind blown.
You can't make this stuff up.
It's going to be a complete and total rebrand this fall. Basketball Conference, the Bowling Green Football Podcast.
Oh, my
total
God.
Total rebrand city.
Van Gorder's the defensive coordinator because Carl Pelini walked out on him.
I am going to do my absolute best to follow Bowling Green football this year now that I know this. And I'm not joking. Like, they're going to be – I'm going to put their schedule in my phone. I'm going to check – oh, my holy goodness. Are you? Wow. Okay, yeah. Okay, Bowling Green. Okay, let's do it.
All right, all three of us have homework. What is the 2019 Bowling Green football drinking game that you would survive?
Ooh.
By the way, Carl Pelini walked out on Scott Loeffler to go join his brother Bo at Youngstown State. The Pelini brothers ride once again.
But isn't he going to be isn't he the coach in waiting? So, like, Bo's going to coach a couple more years and then go, and then, you know, and then Carl's going to take over again or something like that. Like, I thought I heard maybe that is being part of the deal as well. And if I'm wrong, then I apologize for that. I'm not like trying to break news or anything. I thought that was a thing that I saw. So, like, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. It was unintentional.
Yeah, I got the Scott Loeffler offense. Drink every time you run a jet sweep. Drink every time you run read option. Drink every time you run a jet sweep. Literally drink every time you run read option. Like, you're dead already. I'm dead just thinking about it.
Drink double on plays that go for a loss.
Oh, Jesus.
You're not going to survive the first quarter, bro. Like, no.
Oh. Drink if you can call. And drink if you can call the next play from the stands.
Oh, jeez. I mean, I could have done that with Miami, but I just went on Football Scoop and it says Carl Pelini is expected to be named the defensive coordinator, and either expressly or with the understanding that he is now the head coach in waiting. I didn't make that up. Boom, told you.
You literally can't make this stuff up. You can't.
Right?
Okay. Basketball Conference listeners, your homework, send us an email, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com. What is the What is the Bowling Green Football 2019 drinking game that would be amusing to play but would not kill me? That's your criteria.
Taking all suggestions.
This is a crowdsourcing effort at this point. It would entertain me but would not kill me. That's what I want to know.
I cannot wait to listen to the episode when you guys recap all of these. This is going to be high comedy.
Goodness. Okay. We are an hour and 15 minutes in, which means it is time for the main event, and then we got to get out of here. Last thing I got, guys. We have early season betting lines for a couple of ACC games. It is time to talk about these. We got four games here. Let's start here, Cam. Your Miami Hurricanes starting the season. Week zero in Orlando, Camping World Stadium, against your Florida Gators. The Gators are an 8.5-point favorite. What do we think? We think Miami covers 8.5 here?
I got to see more, honestly. I almost want to put this as incomplete if I have to make a pick right now. Just based upon what we have already seen, I'm going to go with Florida to cover that. With the full understanding that Miami is, and like the Miami Athletic Department, Canes Football on Twitter just put out today, because the fan base has been bitching and moaning about the lack of video and like access. And they said from the official verified account, we're not putting information out there. We are hiding what we are doing on offense to unveil that August 24th. I don't know. So I'm, you know, like you said, I have a full-time day job. I'm not able to be an on-site beat writer. I'm not sure. So from the foundation of what we have now, with an offensive line that has two returning starters, but they're probably both going to play new spots. So you have, for all intents and purposes, five new starters up front on offensive line and a new starting quarterback and some uncertainty at some other positions pending these guys actually getting on campus and performing. Everything right now points to Florida covering, but my heart of hearts, I don't think that's going to happen. But if I had to make a pick right now, I'm going to take Florida.
Yeah, I'm taking Florida too. Pretty much echo everything that Cam said. I think there's too much uncertainty. First of all, it's the opener. Second of all, I think there's too much uncertainty with Miami, with the quarterbacks, et cetera, et cetera. I like the momentum that Miami has. I just think that Florida, there's more certainty with the Florida Gators football program right now than there is with Miami. Not to say that Florida is more talented, but simply that Miami, I think, has more question marks at more prominent positions on the field than Florida does at this point in time. So I'd roll with Florida to cover as we sit here talking about this in April. I think that's the safer pick at this point.
I totally see what you guys are saying. My biggest concern would be giving 8.5 points against a defense as good as Miami's is going to be. But at the same time, I mean, which team do I trust to score? You know, if this is a 28-17 kind of game, that's totally reasonable to me. And I trust Florida's offense way more than I trust Miami's at this point, especially game one in late mid-August, right? Like, So that's probably the right side. That is, you know, outside of a touchdown, I don't know if I'd love that on a neutral site. So probably fair. Okay. Moving on. The Florida State Seminoles taking on the Boise State Broncos. And I'm pretty sure I read this line right. This is in Jacksonville, by the way. The Noles are a 4.5-point favorite against Boise State. Does anybody know why Florida State's favorite in that game?
The name on the front of the jersey.
Yep. I agree.
Might be the best I got. So I we're agree. On Boise, right? Outright? Yep.
Probably.
No. I don't know about outright, but like I'm definitely leaning Boise way. Outright,
I mean, Florida is like
twist my arm outright. You know what the hell?
I don't know that I've seen or read anything that suggests that Florida State's going to be able to block a damn thing up front on offense. And I mean, if Boise is in a total rebuild year, traveling all the way across country against the raw talent that Florida State's going to have on the field, like, okay, I guess Florida State can win that. But like, in just terms of looking at like how functional were these teams last year, like, I have to think that Boise State would just wipe the floor with Florida State.
I mean, if this was the 2018 iterations of those teams, absolutely, 100%. But it's not. And as reprehensible as you may find him to be, Kendall Briles can call some offense.
The Briles factor's got to be factored in here.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, their offensive line, like Miami's, has been a sieve recently, and you know, things like that. I mean, they lose a lot on defense and don't necessarily have the players to replace it. And, you know, so there are things to like on either side. But, you know, it'll be interesting.
For what it's worth, S&P Plus says Boise State is like a point and a half favorite here.
Oh, yeah, Broncos. Man. All right, let's go. Let's
ride. So keep an eye on that. Next game in Charlotte, week one. The USC Gamecocks, a 7-point favorite against our North Carolina Tar Heels. I have no earthly idea how I feel about this game.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the North Carolina is going to go with a freshman at quarterback because last year's starting quarterback is now playing linebacker. What?
Which is a crazy, maybe.
Yeah, Chaz Threat. Like,
go ACC.
Yeah. You know, he was 2-time North Carolina offense or high school player of the year as a quarterback, left-handed kid, you know, 6'2", 215 or whatever. And he's, I mean, not full Dan Kendra going from 190 pounds to 250. That's a real deep cut throwback for you ACC fans. But, I mean, yeah, he's up to 225, 230, and he's playing outside linebacker. And they're going to look at maybe Sam Howell to be the starting quarterback. And I just don't see how that's going to go well for them, especially because Muschamp – coaches defense, and he coaches the hell out of some defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the same concern that you have with Miami being on August 24th, so not even just early, but a week less of fall camp early. The same thing with the true freshman likely to start against that South Carolina defense and that Will Muschamp-led defense. So you're going with the true freshman against the brain of Will Muschamp. South Carolina. South Carolina by 10 or more.
Yeah, South Carolina. Right. Very, very, yeah. Very, very safe pick here. I think Mac Brown is actually going to turn out, just because of the staff that he's put together there, I think he's actually going to turn out to be a pretty decent hire. It's going to fly under the radar a little bit. I just feel like so many people dismissed it because everybody felt like North Carolina was like reliving the glory days, and then he put his staff together, and all of a sudden everybody's looking at like, actually, that could work okay. It's not going to work in game one, though. Like, not with a true freshman. Not against Will Muschamp and the South Carolina defense. South Carolina has been, let's call it, on the uptick. They were very inconsistent last year, but let's say they're on the uptick because they are better than when he arrived. South Carolina in game one, that should be way too much for North Carolina, no matter who they're starting at quarterback there in the opener.
I think the biggest question with Mac Brown becomes, you know, what's the longevity there? I mean, is it going to be more than a few years? Again, the guy is already one of the oldest active head coaches in the FBS. I mean, it's a little bit surprising that he came back to coaching at all, but I think there's also a question a little bit too of, I mean, he made some what seemed to be really good coordinator hires, but how much do they make sense with each other? I think it's something else to keep an eye on. As far as, again, week one, what are they able to turn this team into after a couple of pretty brutal years of varying types? I think probably the right call there is just give the 7 points with South Carolina and just expect that program and its continuity is gonna be the right side there. Last one, week two. First of all, this is I don't know why they didn't want to give odds on their week one game against Georgia Tech. Those cowards. Clemson, a 3-touchdown home favorite against Texas A&M. That feels like way too many points, but then again, Clemson has Trevor Lawrence, and Texas A&M does not.
I think Texas A&M could cover 3 scores. That's a lot.
I tend to think so as well.
That's a lot of points. I mean, yeah, they have Trevor Lawrence, and I mean, we saw how, I mean, he's phenomenal, but good God, 3 touchdowns against a Power 5 school from the SEC, 3 scores. I don't know about all that. I mean, I think Clemson wins comfortably, but holy, that's a lot of points.
Yeah, I agree. It's just a lot of points. And even if you're looking at 49 to 30 or, you know, something like that, I mean, that still covers. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, and even if they get up big and they start pulling the stars, you know, your Justin Ross's, your T. Martin's. Wait, his name's not T. Martin. T. whatever, the wide receiver.
Higgins.
T. Higgins. There it is. Yeah. So, yeah, they pull Justin Ross, T. Higgins, Trevor Lawrence, ETN, the running back. They still are going to, you know, put up points and things, but that might leave room for A&M to get a couple, you know, cheap late scores against the second or third team. Or you know, maybe, hey, Jimbo just schemes them up because, you know, he knows them. He coached at Florida State for a while. And, you know, Texas A&M, they got Kellen Mond at quarterback. You know, they have some explosive skill position players and some very good defensive talent. 21 is just a lot. I think it'll maybe be, you know, in that 10 to 17 range, you know, 14 to 17 range for Clemson to win. But 21, that's just too many points. So I would take the other side. Give me A&M.
And Texas A&M just played them tough. Like last year, Texas A&M was a team that, you know, outside of Syracuse when stuff got wonky and Lawrence got hurt, and it was literally right after Kelly Bryant announced his transfer. So they were on their third string quarterback before they blinked. I mean, mm-hmm. Texas A&M was the closest team to beating Clemson last year outside of that weird Syracuse game. So we're not that far removed from that, guys. Like, that's 3 touchdowns is a lot.
Right, and I just looked that up. That was a 2-point ball game. Like, they had a 2-point conversion try to tie the game that fell in.
Yeah.
It was 28-26 in College Station. So you're going to go from that to 3 tutties? And I know that, okay, yeah, Clemson is Clemson, and Clemson just – demolished Alabama in a way that has not been seen since Mike Shula was their coach. I get it, but Clemson loses a lot also. All those defensive linemen they got to replace, and yes, they have 4-star and 5-star guys who are going to be plugging in. You're going to learn the names, you know, Xavier Thomas and I mean, who was a 5-star recruit and he played 13 defensive end last year. Like, I get it, but you know, it's a new year for everybody. And the Clemson we last saw, I don't necessarily think is going to be the Clemson that we're going to see in this game. So, yeah, definitely I'm going with A&M. And I may even say, you know, a little bit fewer points. I don't know how low it would go before I would take Clemson. Like 14, I'm probably taking Clemson. 15.5, it gets a little dicey. But, yeah, I mean, with a line that big, I should probably fly out to Vegas. Actually, I think I'm doing that this summer. And I'll put some money on that.
My man. I like the only thing I'm going to add to what you guys have said, and I agree with all the things that you've said, is we like the last couple, 3 years, we have seen Clemson like totally kick the crap out of teams and win games by like 17 points.
Yes.
Like they don't have to be challenged at all to have a game that ends within 3 scores. And so, like, I would factor that in. I think A&M is the right side there, but Clemson still probably wins fairly easily at home and all that. They've got to rebuild that defense too, for what that's worth. Now they've got plenty of depth that has experience and all that. So I don't really worry about Clemson being able to win that game in Death Valley. But again, Clemson can kick the crap out of teams without really kicking the crap out of them on the scoreboard. So yeah, A&M plus the points there, I think, is what we go with.
I'm a Miami fan. I don't know what you're talking about with Clemson kicking the crap out of somebody and not showing on the scoreboard.
That's why I said the last 2 to 3 years.
Hey, we played them 2 years ago.
I remember the game that got Al Golden fired. Is that what it was?
It was like, oh, it most definitely was.
50-something to nothing. Is that what it was?
59.
Yeah, that's the one. Okay, I remember.
Yeah, that game felt like it got me fired. I mean,
I felt a little guilty watching it. Like,
I know
it was pretty bad. I was there. I stayed the entire time. And in the second half, when most everybody left because Miami was already down by a million, my pastime was counting the number of people in each lower bowl section, and and I counted every section because I could do that. And the most that were remaining were 13. Individual in a specific section, and I kid you not, because I sat there with a pencil and I counted each single part. That's what, yeah, it was bad.
Yikes. All right, guys, that's all I got. Anything else?
We covered a lot of ground.
We sure did. We had not recorded here in about a month. We promised you that we would make it up to you. We have now gone an hour and a half. We have brought on an esteemed guest. I don't know what else you want from us. You have homework, by the way, as a listener. What is the Bowling Green drinking game that would not kill me but would keep me entertained? I want emails about this. BasketballConferencePodcast@gmail.com. Please hit us up.
Again.
We will absolutely, thank you. We will absolutely go through those at a later date. Mr. Cam Underwood, thank you so much for joining us. It has been far too long since you've been on. It is always a pleasure having you on. Do you want to please tell the people where they can go find your works on the internets?
Absolutely. And you guys know that, you know, I love being on with you guys and just hanging out and chopping it up. And we've been in this party chat for near 3 hours now between just the three of us. So, you know, it's been a good time. But, you know, I'm always on stateoftheu.com. You can follow us on Twitter at the State of the U. My personal Twitter is at Underwood Sports. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/the State of the U. Those are all the places that you can find me and our work. We have a great crew of contributors. We're probably going to start recruiting some new contributors. So if you're hearing the sound of my voice and you are a Miami fan like myself, maybe you send an email to that email address. I will not confuse you by giving it to you here, because obviously basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com is the one that you want to be emailing about your Bowling Green drinking games. But anywhere, hey, of course, I mean, I've been around long enough that I, you know, finally have it internalized as well. But all those different places you can follow me, and I hope that you you know, come and support. And if you're a rival fan, I hope that you stop by and check out what we're talking about on a week that we play one of your teams.
Absolutely. Cam, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us. We would love to have you back soon. You don't even have to wait to have us invite you, frankly. You just invite yourself whenever you want, as far as I'm concerned.
You guys always say that, and I make fun of you guys in Twitter DMs. I'm like, yo, I haven't, like, talked to you guys in so long. I feel like, you know, I got estranged from the friendship or something. You're like, oh, yeah, like, whatever. So, you know, you guys always say this, and it ends up being 6 months before we talk to each other. So
Outside of taking veiled shots at you on social media and literally tagging you in them, I can't think of a better way to connect with you than by doing this every couple months.
No, definitely, man. It's always a good time. Thanks for having me, guys. And for everybody who's listening, I hope that you continue to do that and also your homework and come fan with us over at State of the U.
Can't appreciate it, brother. Come back soon. All right, Mike, that's Cam Underwood. We've got to get out of here. It is getting excessively late here. You're playing a road game. You got to go do
always
business things. Yeah, as per the use. So we're going to come back at some point, probably tell this NC State story of the last couple of years and how the draft prospects have all worked out and all these good things. In the meantime, they can find us on Twitter. I'm at FTRSJoey. He is at Mike McDaniel CFB. Together, we're at BC Podcast ACC. And once again, you can go find Cam at Underwood Sports or at State of the U, on Twitter. You can go find him all the sorts of Miami coverage, all sorts of MLB The Show talk, all sorts of Game of Thrones. There's a lot of TV shows you talk about on there. There's all sorts of good stuff, all sorts of content on Cam's Twitter. Go check that out. You can also find us on Facebook. Excuse me. That's Mike's thing. I'm rusty, man. It's been a month or so. I'm rusty. I apologize. iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, the Overcast app, wherever fine podcasts are sold for free. Please, by the way, share us with your friends. We've only been able to grow this podcast because people tell their friends about it. So if you know another ACC football fan in your life and you tell them you listen to the Basketball Conference Podcast and you're like, Why are you listening to college basketball podcasts? You can just explain to them, no. It's not a basketball podcast. It's a college football
podcast. We're a Bowling Green football podcast.
This is a Bowling Green football podcast that you need in your life. So, yeah, tell your friends. We would appreciate that. Mike, you want to tell me where they can find us on the social medias?
Yeah, Facebook, facebook.com/basketballconference. Rate, review, find all of our podcasts there, Joey.
Yes, please do that. Please do that. And once again, I've mentioned this a couple times already, but the email address you are to send your homework to or any other questions or any other topics you want us to discuss on this here podcast, football related or otherwise, those can all go to the longest email address in demand, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it again.
That's a combo right there.
Not rusty.
Bonus points, yeah. Like riding a bike. Mike, they can find us on YouTube if they want to come watch and want to check out one of Cam's large repertoire of Miami shirts. He's got the polo going, the dark green polo with the orange stripe. Yep, there it is. Oh, it's a zipper. Oh, that's the shacket? Is that what Godfrey and Bill called it?
Yeah, it's the shacket, the quarter zip pullover. Yeah.
There you go. Very good. Very good. You can check that out. You can check out my Louisville shirt. It's a deep cut. It's a rare one. I also did some hanging around the room. So I've got a mirror that's no longer sitting on the floor. It's actually on the wall now. So check that out. Mike, anything else before we get out of here?
No, man. I think we're good.
I think so. You want to come back and record sometime soon, probably in less than a month?
Yeah, less than a month would be good.
Let's do that. All right. Well, for that guy, Mr. Mike McDaniel, and for our esteemed guest, Mr. Cameron Underwood, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. Congratulations to Mike's Virginia Cavaliers for winning the national championship. Just by the way,
throw up.
Just throwing that in there. Mike's Cavs are national champions. We will talk to you guys again soon. And until next time, go ACC.